You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there, welcome to the Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio. I am your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, and I am here to help you stop counting calories, carbs, and fat grams so you can easily get to a healthier weight and get on with your life. That is what it's all about, right? We want to help you get to a place where you're thinking about your day, not your diet, thinking about your well-being, not your weight. That's the idea. So if you would like to talk with me today, the number here in the studio is 818-570-5085. 818-570-5085. If you call in and there is no answer, that is because I am on another call. Right now, I do not have the ability to answer calls and then, you know, put them on hold. So just try back. Or if you are listening to the show, just wait till I'm off with whoever I'm talking to and then give me a call. And I look forward to connecting with you soon. So I have a couple of questions that people wrote in the Facebook group. And then I'm going to talk about shame. Shame and how that affects our relationship with food. Okay, so questions. Andy says, his problem is eating out of boredom. He says, how do I curb that? Sometimes I'll drink hot tea to substitute for food. Gina says, why am I always eating at night and can't stop? And Sue says, since hitting menopause, I am constantly hungry. Sue, I'm going to start with you first. That is likely a physiological question. That is something for your medical doctor or for a dietitian. Has to do with with estrogen and the changes in your body post-menopause. And so that is not so much a psychological question as it is a physiological question. So I'm going to ask you to call your doctor or call a dietitian or someone who could really help you with that. There are things you can do hormonally. There are things you can do as far as what you eat, maybe more protein, but it's not really, you know, in my wheelhouse to give nutritional advice. But that's the good news is it's probably physiological, not psychological. Okay. So Andy is eating out of boredom. What to do? How to curb that? Well, here's the thing. Here's the thing about boredom. Boredom is about wanting to do something. And the way to alleviate boredom is to do some activity, to be active and productive. And of course, eating is something to do. So I guess it goes in line with that. However, being busy all the time, doing things all the time, can be very unhelpful if it keeps you from connecting with yourself, with your thoughts and your emotions. So sometimes people think that they are bored when they're really lonely or they're really empty. So loneliness is about wanting to be with someone. And the solution to loneliness is to be with another person, feel connected, and feel good. That is an ideal world, of course. And emptiness is about feeling disconnected from yourself and from what you are experiencing inside. So again, Andy, you may feel bored, but you may actually be lonely or feeling empty. You know, sometimes the sense of yearning for something or someone can be manifested as physical hunger. So if you're lonely, you might be filling up on food as a way of filling up that symbolic emptiness inside. Even hot tea as a substitute for food, that is, it's warm, it's filling, it kind of conveys a sense of comfort. So Andy, you may be thinking about, you may want to think about what is it that's really going on if it's not boredom? Is it loneliness? Is it emptiness? Think about, you know, what is the symbolism of this hot tea? What is the food going to do for you? Again, boredom is easy. Boredom is, I want something to do, so I'm going to do something. It's usually not boredom. Boredom is one of those umbrella emotions, too. It's like we label it as boredom, but it really is something else because it's not very palatable, pardon the expression, to feel lonely or empty. It's a lot easier to feel bored. So that is what I would suggest for Andy or anyone else out there who struggles with feeling bored and eating while bored. Is it loneliness? Is it emptiness? If not, then if it's not boredom, then find a way to connect with people. Find a way to connect with yourself. And if it is 3 a.m. and there are not people available, then you have to find a way to be comforting to yourself other than use food to distract from what you're feeling or to give you comfort. And that is about validating, acknowledging, and reassuring what you are feeling. Yes, it's 3 a.m. and I am feeling lonely, let's say. That's a hard feeling. It's hard to feel lonely when there's no one around that I can talk to. It's hard to feel all by myself. Maybe this takes me back to when I, other times in my life when I felt really bad and really disconnected and you know, just so alone. But I got through those times. I will get through this time. It's 3 a.m. I'll call someone later. Or if I have nobody to call, let me figure out what steps I can take to find people to connect with. And by the way, what better place to connect with people than Dr. Nina's Food for Thought community on Facebook? People all over the world there. So whatever time zone you're in, you're going to probably find someone who's available. And if you reach out in the group, someone might just respond. So if you're not in the group, by the way, you're listening to this and you're not in the group, reach out, Dr. Nina's Food for Thought community on Facebook. Join us and, you know, find some people. Find your people, people who get it and who really can resonate with what is going on with you. Okay, Gina, why am I always eating at night and can't stop? Well, that is a question I get a lot, a lot, a lot, a lot. People will say, hey, I eat so well during the day. Eating is not a problem. They'll tell me they eat clean, which is just a pet peeve of mine. Really, what do you eat dirty if you're not eating clean? They'll eat well, they'll make good choices, they'll make healthy choices, they won't overeat, they'll have their salad for lunch or whatever they think is healthy or clean or whatever, and then they do really well and they're very proud of themselves, and then they get home, they eat dinner, and after dinner, all of that goes out the window because they just head to the kitchen and they can't stop eating. Why is this? Well, in part because during the day, you are busy, you are doing lots of things, whether you're at work or you are retired and doing things. A lot of people I know who are retired are very, very busy during the day. They're going to lectures, they're going on hikes, they're meeting friends, they're going to the movies, they're doing this or they're doing that. And then come dinner time, then they're alone with themselves, or they're raising kids and they're very busy running around after kids, or they're at a job and they're very busy dealing with the job and they're always distracted. There's something to do, distracted from themselves. At night, after dinner, even if there are other people in the house, you're alone with yourself. And that's when those thoughts might come unbidden into your head. You might start thinking about things you don't want to think about. You might start feeling things you don't want to feel. And that's when food becomes just an ever-present distraction. Because then if you're thinking about, oh, I can't believe I'm eating this, you're distracting from whatever it is underneath that you don't want to feel or you don't want to think about. So I would ask yourself, Gina, if you were not able to eat at night, what would you be left with? What would you be left thinking about? What would you be left with as far as your emotions? What would be going on? What would be eating at you? And again, remember my food mood formula, because sometimes we get so good at turning to food that we don't even know we're being triggered. We think we're being triggered by food. No, we're being triggered by something. Food is the solution to the problem. It is not the problem. The problem is loneliness or emptiness or anxiety or some kind of guilt or fear or something unsettling or upsetting. So the food mood formula helps you figure that out. If creamy foods are your thing, then that is a sign that you may need comfort. If filling, I recognize this number. Hello, Nicole. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Dr. Thank you.
How are you doing? Uh-oh. We can't hear you. Nicole, Ronan is working to... Wait, Ronan is... He's saying reconnect her. Okay, can you call back? Oh, now I can hear you.
Yes, true.
Okay.
Okay. Should I call back or are you...
No, we got you now. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I was just seeing, I was reflecting on this whole, like, journey and process, and, you know, I feel like sometimes I progress, sometimes I regress, and, you know...
Nicole, I got to... Nicole, you've got a... We've got a bad connection. So can you call me right back?
Okay, I'll call you back.
Okay.
Yeah, sure. Bye. Okay, bye.
As we're waiting for her to call back, I just want to normalize progression leads to regression. Okay, let's see how this is.
Okay, how about now?
It's better.
Okay. So I don't know what you heard, but I was just saying that I was reflecting on this, you know, journey, and, you know, sometimes I feel like I progress and then I regress, and I feel like, you know, recently I've been feeling a little bit of progress and it feels good, and I'm just trying to be more intuitive, and I was just paying attention to, you know, when I eat something that I want and I don't feel guilty about it, it's like, it's such a liberating and freeing feeling to eat what I want and not feel bad about it and not feel like it's a crime and not, like, feel shameful and just enjoy it. And it's
yes.
Just so different.
Yes. When you identify and challenge the rules that you have grown up believing were written in stone, and you challenge those rules and you smash that stone and create new reasonable rules, it is liberating.
Yeah. And yeah, like I think that I'm like the thinnest I've ever been. And, you know, like I used to think rice is like so bad, and like I eat rice sometimes, and because I don't make it so forbidden, I can just have, like, as much as I really want to have and enjoy it and not feel bad about it and not eat it all because I, anticipation of deprivation, and I tell myself, oh, I'm not going to have it for, like, another month or another 2 months. I can just have a little bit and enjoy and really savor the taste and, like, go
yes.
on with my day. And
yes.
It's hard because I tap in and out of that, so it's like, When I can do that, it feels really good. So I guess my question partly is, like, you know, like I was talking about progressing and regressing, and, like, right now I feel like I'm in a good place. How can I stay, like, consistently with that so I'm not, like, regressing and progressing and progressing and regressing all the time?
Well, it is the two steps forward, one step back. You're still a step ahead. So to remind yourself,
okay.
Yes, progression leads to regression, but temporarily. So to normalize it, this is how it is. Look at when babies learn, they go from crawling to walking to then they crawl again because it freaks them out. Oh, I'm mobile.
Yeah.
Yikes. Crawl again.
Right.
But they don't stay crawling. I mean, we don't see a lot of adults crawling around, you know, the world. No, eventually...
Right.
eventually everyone gets on their own 2 feet, and so will you
with
respect to this. So it's just the normal process of change, and to remind yourself when a regression comes to say, okay, this is part of the normal process. It's temporary. And what happens is then the periods between progression and regression get longer and longer and longer. And eventually this is your new way of being. And it's no longer a progression. It's just how life is.
Got it. I love that. Oh, I can't wait to get there.
Well,
I'm definitely going in that direction.
You are going very far in that direction. If you go back and listen to some of your early calls when you first started calling me, a difference.
Yeah, it's true. Ugh, I could never be where I am and have made this progression without your help. So thank you.
You're welcome.
And also, can I talk to you? So my sister struggles with a lot of this stuff too, and I feel like I'm trying to work on it and get better, but I don't know if she's getting that same. I think in her head she really has those rules still, and she goes to Weight Watchers to kind of just like stay on track. And I know Weight Watchers is one of the more healthier diet things, right? Because you can eat what you want and you count points or whatever.
Yes.
I don't know. I never did Weight Watchers. But the other day, last night she called me and she's like, I tried to like pacify myself and calm myself down, but I went on the scale and I've gained 7 pounds. And, you know, she said it was kind of that time of the month and that she'd gone out with her friends and had some alcohol and she's probably retaining water. And I'm like, to my sister, I'm not going to say her name anyways. I'm like, there's no way you could gain 7 pounds in 5 days. Like, that's just not feasible. Like, if you think about it, like a pound is 3,500 calories, like 3,500 times 7, there's no way you exceeded, you know, your calorie intake by that much. Like, it's that time of the month, and that's normal, and you had alcohol, like you said, and you had sushi, and, like, just don't freak out, stay calm, and, you know, after this time of the month is over, like 2 or 3 days after, go back on the scale, and you'll see that you're back to normal. Like, just calm down, you know, and I tried to calm her down. But I don't know, because I'm really sensitive to this stuff too. Sorry, I'll let you talk, but I was just going to say, because I'm really sensitive to this stuff too, like, it kind of affects me.
Well, you can also make a boundary with her and say, look, I am not engaging in weight talk anymore. I'm not talking about my own weight. I'm not talking about your weight. I'm not letting mom talk about it. And I think that we have lots of other things to think about other than what the number on the scale is. So you can protect yourself by just setting that boundary. It doesn't help. It makes you feel bad about yourself. It makes you, Nicole, triggered, and it doesn't help your sister. Remember, for you, you would be preoccupied with 2 pounds, right? And it was like, well, what's 2 pounds? Yeah. Well, for you, 2 pounds meant the difference between being acceptable and lovable or somehow unlovable because you were the overweight kid who felt unlovable. And so you were desperately trying not to gain weight, even 2 pounds, because it meant that there was something unlovable about you and not good enough about you as a whole person. And so if your sister grew up in the same house, well, chances are there's a similar message that she absorbed. So that's why being reasonable and rational and saying, hey, you know, you probably didn't gain the 7 pounds doesn't help her, because for her, whatever the reason for that 7 pounds on the scale, it has some meaning.
Yeah.
So, like, and what's the meaning?
I understand the boundary thing and setting boundaries and saying I'm not going to talk about weight anymore, but I don't want to come off, like, mean and harsh. Like, a part of me wants to be there for her, and I want to be a loving sister, and I can only imagine how she feels, because I remember going on the scale, and like I said, even if I went up 1.5 pounds, I would freak out. So to go on the scale and see that you've gone 7 pounds, like I honestly, that's never really happened to me, so I can't even imagine what it feels like.
Okay, it's not mean and harsh. It's not mean, yeah, but you have an overabundance of empathy because you're focusing on the weed and not the root. It's like she's saying, look at, I have 7 weeds in my garden. And you're going, oh, well, here are the different ways that we can think about that weed rather than what's the root of that those weeds. So it's harsh to say, I know this is worrying you and I know that you're extremely upset and bothered by it. But you know, let's talk about what it means to you, not whether you in fact have gained 7 pounds or not. Like, why is this so make or break? And here's what I've learned. Yeah. And what else, what, you know, we have other things on our mind, don't we, sister, besides this?
Yeah, I like that. Okay, I could use that. And then, I guess on that note, it's like, I want her to do some, I'm not saying I'm perfect, I'm very imperfect, and there's still a lot of work to do, but I feel like I'm doing the work, and like I want the same for her. Like I want her to do the work too, and I want her to progress and mature, and I want her to move out of my parents' house, and I just feel like there's so much potential there, but I don't know, I want to help her. I want to tell her, like,
there's
help yourself, you know, like stuff. I don't know.
There's an expression, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it him or her drink. Right. You can suggest, you can say, hey, look, here's a different way to think. Here's a different way. But you cannot force someone into that. They have to come to it of their own, you know, volition. They have to come to it on their own. Now, you could say, hey, I've discovered these ideas and this is how it's helped me. And I'm happy to help you or get you help or talk to you about it. You let me know if you're interested, but I can't collude with the part of you that is feeling bad about yourself anymore. It's actually a kindness to not talk about her weight with her, because then you're colluding with it. You're with her.
Yeah. And it's actually really interesting to see my own progress with my sister, because I remember there was a time where I was super insecure and I hadn't done a lot of this work, and I was competitive with her, and I wanted to be skinny and I wanted her not to be skinny,
because it meant lovable.
Competitive thing.
Because it meant
what?
Because it meant love.
It meant lovable.
Yeah, you thought you were you thought you were competing for who's the skinniest. On the surface, that's what it seemed, but when we dig deeper, it was, well, if the skinnier one is the more lovable one, then you're competing for lovability, which is brings you back to your childhood. And when you said that you felt like because you were the overweight one, you weren't as good or as loved as she was.
It's crazy. My God. Like, I remember I had a nutritionist and I said that she was like my ammunition and I didn't want to share her because I felt like she was my person, but it was really that I didn't want my sister to be as skinny as I was, so I didn't want to share my nutritionist with her. And I look back and I'm laughing. It sounds so ridiculous. And like, it feels good. I'm getting emotional. I don't want to, but it feels good to be in a place where I don't feel so competitive with her, but more like, and more empathetic and more, I want you to be the best you can be too, and I want to help you, and I want to give you that same ammunition so we can both be amazing.
Yeah.
And wow, I didn't think I would be at this place where I could say that, but that just feels really, really good.
Aw, yeah. Well, you have called every week for how long? A year and a half? So, you've not just called in, but I could tell you're thinking about what we talk about. So you've worked really hard to integrate some of these different ideas and to think about the things that have been difficult to think about. And you're also, you know, a great example of how when you look under the surface and you figure out, well, what's really going on, it's not what it seems to be on the surface. Like,
yeah,
you know, it's about avoiding shame, right? Like even with your haircut, when you said, will the haircut make you look bigger? It was avoiding the shame of having the haircut when you were 10 and feeling as if you didn't look as good and therefore were not as likable or lovable because your weight was tied to your lovability and it must not be, ever.
Right. Got it. Yeah. Because I'm going to be pregnant one day and I'm going to have a huge stomach and what, that's going to mean my husband's not going to love me as much? No, I'm going to be just as lovable and if not even more lovable because I'm carrying his child. And my child.
Yes, you're growing a person. Wow. Yeah. Yes. Yes. So, yeah, you're changing the way you think. Your sister is behind you in this, but you can set an example and you could just refuse to join her in this scale obsession.
Yeah. Okay, so next time she calls me and she's like upset about weight or wants to talk about weight or diet, I'm just going to say, Bridge, I love you. I want to be there for you. But let's not talk about weight or image. Like if we weren't talking about weight right now, what would we be discussing? I mean, we have so much more going on and then change the subject.
Perfect.
Is that good?
That's great.
Okay.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. You get an applause for that. Yes. Perfect.
Okay.
Absolutely.
And then maybe I'll have her call you. Maybe next week I'll have her call you as like a, I don't know, experiment or like, I don't know. Maybe, I don't know if she'll have the same connection or whatever, but I don't know, maybe it can help.
Maybe you should have her listen to the show or now watch the show.
Yeah, just listen. Yeah, that's a good idea. Okay.
Yeah. Have her listen to an early one. Have her listen to an early one from when you first called and then have her listen to today's or last week's or something. So she could see the difference.
How can I go to the archive?
Well, you can go to iTunes or anywhere where there are podcasts, and you can.
Okay.
So you can just go to Apple Podcasts and do the search for the Dr. Nina Show on LA Talk Radio, and you'll see all of them. And they're now available both on audio and the video because we're now in the video studio. So
perfect.
You could see me talk to you.
Okay. Thank you. I'm going to have her listen to an old one and then like a more recent one.
Okay.
And then it'll be interesting to listen to me in the future and then today too. So, okay, anyways.
Yeah, or call, have her call in with you.
Yeah. Okay, maybe we'll do that.
Okay, well,
thank
surprise
you,
me. You're welcome, Nicole.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
Ah, what a difference that has been for Nicole. For those of you who are longtime listeners, you know what I'm talking about. For those of you who aren't, take my word for it. Huge transformation. Okay, so food mood formula. Creamy foods need for comfort. Filling foods, which are the second category, you know, bread, pasta, pizza, cake, anything that kind of takes up space in your stomach. That is correlated to loneliness because they symbolically fill that internal void. So if you crave those kinds of foods, that's a clue you may be feeling deprived or lonely and you're using food to, again, symbolically fill up. The last category that is crunchy. Anything with a crunch is about anger. So if that's your go-to, then maybe you have to express your anger, not towards yourself for eating or whatever you weigh or whatever, but who or what would you be angry with if you weren't angry with yourself? So those are some things to think about. Gina, if any of those resonate, let me know. Also, people tell me that they often will crave all three. Well, yes, but there's usually one go-to category. And I forgot the last one, which is not part of the food mood formula, but I think I'm going to, you know, include it, which is candy and chocolate, which is about wanting sweetness in your life. Wanting sweetness in your life. So that's some food for thought. Let me know if that resonates with you, and hopefully that will help. Okay, shame. Shame. We've been talking about shame, how to deal with shame. And one of the things that you can do is untangle the message that you're getting when you shame yourself. When you say to yourself, oh, I'm so ashamed of myself, or I'm so embarrassed, I'm so humiliated, I can't believe I ate that. What's wrong with me? These are all shaming kinds of thoughts. What's wrong with me? Or sometimes we talk to ourselves in the second person. What's wrong with you? What's wrong with you? Who's talking, by the way? And often if you find yourself using that second person voice, change it to first person. Switch it from, what's wrong with you? How could you have eaten that? You have no willpower. Switch it to, what's wrong with me? How could I have eaten that? I have no willpower. I am going to suggest that you cannot say it with as much hostility in first person voice as you do in second person. It's easy to yell at yourself from a second person distancing stance. Not so easy when it's I. So shame, by the way, is there something wrong with me? Guilt is, there's something wrong with what I'm doing. I want to do something different and I'm not doing it, or I'm doing something I don't want to do. That's guilt. It has to do with what you're doing or not doing. Shame has to do with who you are. Who you are. So when you feel bad about yourself, oh, it's so hard to feel good, isn't it? And that's why we got to challenge some of these ideas. I hear people all the time as they're eating at restaurants. They'll say like, oh, I'm going to just be bad. Or, oh, I'm being so bad, but I can't help myself. Well, when you're always telling yourself that you're bad for what you're eating, your mind is listening to yourself. And it's really hard to chastise yourself into accepting and loving yourself. You can't tell yourself you're bad and feel guilty and shamed and bad and somehow arrive at feeling good. So we really have to challenge this notion of being bad, that you're being bad if you're eating something you don't think you should eat, or just that there's something indefinably bad about you. Maybe you're feeling humiliation, you're feeling embarrassment. So take the time to analyze, like, where did you get the message that it's bad to eat brownies, for example? Or, you know, what is another way to think about it? If a friend of yours was saying, oh, I'm being so bad, I was so bad, I feel so bad about myself, and just really shaming herself or himself, what would you say to your friend? Would you say, yeah, you really blew it, you're disgusting? I don't think so. You would probably say something encouraging to your friend, something reassuring. So if you wouldn't say it to a if you would say something, let me gather my thoughts. Did I mention I had the flu this week and I am not completely back mentally? If you talk to yourself in a way that is cruel, you're going to feel bad. If you talk to yourself in a way that feels kind, you're going to feel good. So the idea is to talk to yourself as you would talk to a friend. Talk to yourself as you would a friend and feel better about yourself. Another way that we create shame in ourselves is to only see ourselves as what we do for a living. And that way we're constantly having to do more and more and more and more and more because it's never good enough. We're chasing some sense of good enoughness in which there will be no shame. But it's an illusion that doing more will make you feel better about yourself. Doing more will make you more productive, maybe, but it won't make you feel better about yourself, ultimately, because what you do is not who you are, and you can't work your way out of feeling bad about yourself. So question the idea that your self-worth is tied to what you do. And it's really bad here in the United States. I have a friend who's English, and she said that one of the weirdest things for her when she first came to the States was that people would say, well, so what do you do? Like one of the first questions. And she said, in England, people don't really ask that question right off the bat. They want to get to know you, like, what are you into, or, what are your politics, or, things like that, as opposed to, well, let me define you by what you do for a living. So if we define ourselves by what we do, then we put our self-esteem into how productive we are. Sooner or later, we're going to slow down. You can't keep writing books, for example. You can't keep doing more and more and more and more to prove yourself to other people. It's impossible. And it doesn't help you feel good about who you are. Also have to ask yourself, where did you get this idea of not good enough in the first place? Well, here's what happens. If our needs are not met as children, and this doesn't mean we have bad parents. Yes, there are bad parents out there, but a lot of times there's just a misattunement, or there's just parents are depressed, or they're busy, or they've got too many kids, or they've got too much going on, and they can't be as attuned to their kids as maybe they think they are being or they would want to be. Or they're just so different, they don't understand their kids, so they can't relate to their kids, and the kids are left feeling just like no one gets them in the family, or there's a message of hold that thought, I have another call. Hi, caller, you're on with Dr. Nina.
Hi, Dr. Nina, it's Andrea, how are you?
Hi, Andrea, good to hear from you. How are you doing?
Not bad. Are you over the cold yet?
I am over...
You're still sick.
No, I am not. I had the flu, full-on flu, but I am totally over it, and I am over it. My head is just not completely over it. You know when you've been sick and you kind of get that foggy feeling? That's...
Absolutely, unfortunately.
Still got a little touch of that, but I'm here and I'm talking, so thank you for asking.
No problem. Okay, so I call in and I feel like I end up venting, but okay. So
oh, wait.
Backstory.
There's nothing wrong with venting. Venting is sharing. What's wrong with venting, and where did you learn the idea that sharing is venting, and which has a negative connotation to it? Feel free to share whatever is on your mind. Venting,
thank you.
Vent away.
So I think the very first time I called, we sort of started talking about this, but it's something that's still been really bothering me, and it seems to be getting worse. This idea of, and you were just talking about not being enough and body image and things like that. Being a millennial who has been exposed to social media and all these things her entire life, it's hard not to compare. So you see all these people, whether it's like the Kardashians or whomever, and now we're being put in a situation where I think most of us end up comparing ourselves to them or their standard of beauty or their bodies. And it's hitting home. Like it's something that I've been thinking a lot about, unfortunately, and not in like a positive way, whether it's comparing myself or what can I do or what food can I eat or what food should I stay away from to be able to look a certain way and feel a certain way, when in reality, I know that that's not necessarily achievable. I don't know. Does that make sense? Like it's very hard to put into words.
Oh, you're articulating it very well. And this is not just...
Thank you.
This is not just in the age of social media. This is since all time, right? I mean, I'm sure that when Rubens painted his paintings of those women, people were like, oh, I'm too thin. I need to look more like the women in the picture, in the painting. Marilyn Monroe, if we now look at Marilyn Monroe, she would be considered plus size. So this is just,
I hate that word.
And yes, it's yes.
Another label.
It's another label. But so in the 50s, women were going, why can't I be more curvy like Marilyn? And if you look at advertisements from the 50s, they'll like show some skinny looking woman on the beach, and men aren't paying attention to her because they're looking at the voluptuous woman down the beach. And the ad will be like, gain weight, you know, drink these shakes and gain weight. And then in the 70s, it was like, you know, or the 60s, it was Twiggy and how can you be skinny? So there's always some iconic kind of person who is the look of the year or the decade.
Yeah.
But we also live in an age where we are challenging that. And so it's all...
That's the one beautiful thing that gives me a lot of hope. The fact that there's so many of us that are open-minded and that we're challenging it.
It's a construct. You know, it's just a construct. And I have a 12-year-old daughter who, and by the way, we live in Calabasas. I've seen Kim Kardashian. She doesn't look like she looks like in Instagram. Let me just say that. So, and that's a whole other thing, which is the whole Photoshopped thing. You know, I have a 12-year-old daughter, and I do not want her saying, my goodness, I want to look like Kim Kardashian, because why do we think Kim Kardashian is something? She made a sex video and really knows how to promote herself. Mm-hmm. Like, challenge the idea of, why do we think this is good? Why, you know,
where does that notion come from?
Where does this notion come from? And isn't it about, there's about accepting your body, which is different from Kim Kardashian's, which is different from mine, which is different from, we're all individuals, we're all different. We all have different types of shapes. To embrace the diversity and to accept who we are.
You make it sound so simple, but that's like logically speaking, that makes so much sense. But when you're thrown into these situations, it's like,
well, there's this,
the why, that constant nagging, that terrible feeling of, oh, I'm not enough, or why don't I look like that? Maybe I shouldn't have had that brownie yet, or this, all these things.
And, but if you did look
it's
like her,
annoying.
Then what? So what, and then what? Like, let's say you magically got Kardashian'd and woke up tomorrow and you're like, you know, a clone of Kim Kardashian. Then what?
I don't know.
Well, that's,
I guess there's
the
not
allure.
Really much to it, is there? I would just look like her.
And then what?
I don't think my daily life would change. I don't think. I think that I'd maybe feel better about myself, but I know that that's not necessarily true.
Yes, and why do you have to change to feel better about yourself? And who put the freaking Kardashians as the epitome of how you should look?
I don't know, but it's annoying because I'm about embracing diversity. That's something that really resonates near me and near my heart, and it's interesting to think about that, actually. Like, where did that notion, where did that social construct of beauty come from? Who was that person that said that is what beauty is? If that is the standard of beauty?
I think it was Kim Kardashian.
Honestly, they're amazing marketers. Like, the fact that they've marketed themselves from sexism, I don't know if I can use that word on the radio, to what they are now, if anything, is just purely marketing.
Yes. So your feeling not good enough about yourself is a triumph of marketing over self-esteem.
That makes sense. I'm so happy I call in. I really am, because this has been bothering me for so long. And I know I'm not the only one.
You are not the only one. And the irony is that, 10 years ago or whatever, Kim Kardashian would have been seen as, overweight and, not at all some social ideal. My point is that our social ideals keep changing.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you can never catch up. You can only be who you are. Embrace diversity. There used to be that the only models were blonde and blue-eyed and, 5'11". Well, now, thankfully, there's a bunch of diversity, and we have models who are of all shades and from all over the world, and we no longer think that beauty is exclusively the purview of blonde, blue-eyed, Amazonian skinny people, right? So it's being able to actively challenge, the idea of, I think this, but why? Why do I think this?
I love that, but why? Questioning it. Because that's not something I had really done.
Well, you're doing it now.
Grateful. Very, very grateful, because I'm just going back to this. Like, I don't know how my life would be different. Like, I really don't think anything would be different other than I would look like Kim Kardashian. Or, like, I'd have that body type, because I don't actually want to be her, right? But her body type.
Yeah. And
there's nothing wrong with my body type. There's nothing wrong with who I am.
Right. Has any guy ever said to you, I'd be really into you if you looked more like Kim Kardashian?
Not those exact words, but something very similar, yes. And again, that's a whole different story, but unfortunately.
Well, I've been skinny shamed a lot, and if someone said that to me, because shame is shame, whether you're skinny shamed or
shame is shame. Absolutely.
So what he just did was show you that he's not the right person for you.
Oh, absolutely! I walked away quicker than I have ever walked in my life. I was like, nope, I'm not handling this. You don't even deserve
a
reaction.
Then don't do that to yourself. Because when you say to yourself, I should look like Kim Kardashian, you're doing exactly what that guy said to you. And you had this reaction of, I don't think so, Buster. So why not have the same reaction to your own voice like that? Don't do that to yourself.
I like that. Don't do that to yourself.
Yeah. Don't body shame yourself. No body shaming. You're welcome. Well,
no body shaming.
No body shaming. Yeah. Not from others and not from yourself. The next time that you, the next time you think, oh, I should be ... remember how you said to that guy, get out of here. No to you. No, thank you. then do that to your, then say that to that voice within you, because
I'm canceling that thought out.
Yeah, cancel that thought. Yeah.
I love that. Thank you.
You are welcome. Thank you so much for calling in and for bringing us to the end of the show. And call me back and let me know how it goes.
I definitely will. Oh, and I have to tell you. Sorry, I know you have to go and I have to tell you this. My trip to Maui, believe it or not, got canceled. Not because of me, not because I didn't want to go, but because of all the stuff that's happening in the world. The airlines are like, nope.
Oh.
They're just being careful and... which is totally fine, because I learned a great lesson and I'm still working on everything you told me, but I will not be laying on a beach enjoying some sun, but I will be going to the spa and treating myself. So
I like that. It's not Maui.
It's self-care and self-love.
I love that. Wait a minute. You get this too. Yay.
Thank you. I've never gotten one of those before.
Oh, now you have. Well, enjoy the spa and call me soon.
I definitely will.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
And that is our show for today. Thank you so much for joining me here on the Dr. Nina Show on LA Talk Radio. I am here live every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific, or you can listen later at iTunes or anywhere you get, or I should say Apple Podcasts. It's not iTunes anymore. You can listen later at Apple Podcasts or anywhere that you get podcasts. And if you love the show, please take a moment to leave a rating, or even better, a review, because the more reviews and ratings, the more it shows up in searches and the more I can help more people. Have a great week, and I'll see you soon.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.